Alright, time for another DoNotGuard.com video presentation and such. So, couple of subjects. Yeah, working on changing this format, camera angles and whatnot. haven't got there yet, obviously. So, whatever. Who needs that kind of crap anyway? So a couple of things on my mind. The first one is, I've talked about it before, but this whole biology thing is just rather, remarkable. I don't think you need to get into a whole bunch of complexity about it, but just the fact of what evolved on planet Earth to end up where we are. And there's lots of people out there who think, oh yeah, it happens all the time in the universe, and there's all kinds of life forms and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't think they really appreciate how strange the story really is. And the key point is in this word life. So I was thinking about definitions, just the idea that many writers of the past would outline some argument they're going to make by first defining a bunch of words. So there was no confusion about what they were saying. And so I was thinking about doing that in this context of philosophy. And, the word life just is so troublesome, because there's really two kinds of life on Earth. They're really not at all similar. Even though one's made out of the other, it's like the difference between a piece of wood and a house. I mean, they really don't have anything to do with each other, or a tree even. They're really, really, really disconnected. And so, we're a colony of living things, billions of them. And it's like saying a city, turns into something that does something, a machine. It becomes a machine of some kind. It's a rather extraordinary leap in what is conceivable as a function, because you would say that there was too much chaos for it to organize into anything that could even make a bottle of Coke, or be an assembly line that actually produced something distinct from its own service, from its own water and sewage and electricity, that would actually do something else that the participants in the city weren't aware of that they were doing. And that's what all our cells are doing. They're all participating in the creation of a functionality that has nothing to do with their world, so to speak. If your cells were little conscious organisms, they would have no idea that they were part of some machine that was functioning in the world, making a YouTube video. It just would be completely, they would think they were sitting in the park by a pond, fishing. there'd be no connection to the idea that this is somehow part of some other universe that's doing something. Because it would be all of the patterns and all of the things happening in their world, the weather, so to speak, would seem randomish. It wouldn't seem like it was for some purpose. And if it had any patterns in it, the patterns would be regular, like the moon going around the earth, and they would just say, well, that's what it does. Anyway, it's just it is a little difficult to, concisely point this piece of perspective, because to me it's such a profound, it's like contemplating infinity in a way. it's very hard to fully appreciate just how really strange it is. So you have this process of evolution that created what we call life, a cell that is a machine, and it, sits in a medium like the ocean or some fluid or whatever, and it functions. It ekes through its medium, collects food, creates, reproductive capacity, and produces a future generation, and keeps doing that. And a DNA molecule is controlling the creation of that individual cell. And then there has to be this change in evolution where these cells organize. And so you can say, okay, the sponge is the routine example provided because the association between the cells is kind of loose. There's no life and death connection. They just sort of collect. Even like a colony of coral maybe is something like that too, where the colony becomes an organism in a way, but it doesn't have any special features. Now a sponge starts to have a few special features. The thing has a shape, so it creates a shape of how they organize. So it's a little bit like you'd almost say chemistry, where the atoms have a shape. But it's very rudimentary, and it certainly isn't going to be thinking, and that's where you had to go. You have to go from the sponge, this loose organization of cells of all the same type, into the construction of a community of cells of all kinds of different type. So they have to be all created, okay, by this one cell, the egg. So it not only has to have all the information needed to maintain that egg cell as a living organism, it has to have this information, this blueprint, on how to build the entire society. So it basically does the Adam and Eve thing. It creates an entire civilization, and the entire civilization is built out of workers and drones, and like an ant colony or something, all these specialized players, your liver cells, your kidney cells, and they all have to be placed in the right location, and they all have to have very explicit rules by which they function, and all of that has to be created through this slow process of evolution. So it gives you some appreciation for just how long living things have been squirming on Earth. But again, you really can't. Unfortunately, you just can't. You can't just say imagine 300 million years. Imagine 2 billion years. No, you can't do that. The brain just won't go there. At least mine won't go there. And really appreciate it. And so you can't really just talk about life on Earth and say, and they do this crap where they say, well, is there life on another planet? Well, would it matter if you found life on another planet? What would it prove? Because it's this rudimentary evolution of creating a DNA molecule. Yeah, it's really complicated. And then the molecule, the cell, has to eat another cell that actually survives inside of it to create a nucleic cell. And then that nucleic cell has to derive the capacity to make structural features that would enable it to propel itself and do different, tools. And then you get to go to the next abiogenesis, the next creation moment, where now you're going to take that stuff and you're going to create cells that will carry electricity and chemical messages and all this other stuff that's going to enable you to create something that's going to synthesize our consciousness. It's going to make the thing capable of doing, hundreds of billions of cells, each of them being used as, little memory storage devices to create illusions in our brain, okay, that make us see things and think things and then, of course, feel things. And, the thinking and the feeling thing really are, quite different. One, you can say, okay, I can see how you could take image data and here you are combining it. A memory would be just a memory, of some event, and it's just in your brain in some sort of crude form, a cheap image of it. I could see, you could live your life and have some device that takes a picture every, 10 seconds. And you could have you could store all of that somewhere. And okay, it would be a lot of gigabytes, but it wouldn't be impossible to store. And sort of your brain is doing that. It's taking clips of your adventure through life and placing them in storage. And the storage is a cell somewhere who's being used as a memory chip. A living thing, is essentially being written on, and being obliged to carry this information that'll be, through the electricity processed back into some sort of event in the community, in the whole system, and cause it to act and react by creating images, by creating storms, let's say weather, in the different communities, the different places where the cell is thinking it's sitting by a pond fishing. Well, it's going to create a weather system. It's going to create some event that's going to cause that cell to have to react. And its reaction, from its perspective, doesn't have anything to do with the idea that it's making a memory or it's going to make somebody cry. It doesn't have any idea that's what it's part of. But that's what it's going to be part of. And it's all this because this system is in control of the weather for, your liver is being controlled by your kidneys, and your kidneys are being controlled by this, and they're all controlling each other's environment. And one is triggering the other into doing something, closing their windows, some event that they all do, the cells, because of some message that's been sent into their environment, some chemical that triggers them. That wouldn't be much different than if we were part of some other being's brain. It would be like it would send a bear down the street, and we'd all have to react to, oh, there's a bear on the street. And we'd have a pretty predictable reaction to the fact that there's a bear on the street. So it's all just chemistry, but I'm just trying to make a more human metaphor. So anyway, I just a personal indulgence in the sense that I think it's the kind of thinking that gives you a deeper appreciation for how extraordinarily bizarre the robot that we are, the machine that we are, okay? And that this machine has this insanely long creation history. And that this creation history has events in it that are just so improbable. And the proof of the improbability is that it never happened a second time. There's no other version of a neuron. There's no other way another organism, any organism on Earth, does thinking or does feeling or does, central processing, except with neurons. And you would think there would be some other cell that in all these millions and millions and millions of years that would have developed into the capacity to send quick messages. And there really isn't any other example. So it's rare, whatever the event was that created that cell and create an environment in which it worked, and therefore it happened again and again and again. It's a, again, all built out of error code, all built out of making more, hundreds of models, and the hundreds of the models are all failures, except one of the failures ends up being successful, it ends up being an advantage. So it's all made out of error code. The whole thing all runs based on the idea that the cells don't replicate perfectly and they have randomized, let's just say, imperfections. A cosmic ray hits, some little X-ray hits, something happens and the piece of code isn't read right because the little machine that's reading the code gets knocked off the rail. Some kind of defect created. That creates these errors in the copies, and and then there's this very rare event where one of those errors actually improves the function of the machine and improves it well enough for the error to be dominant. That is, for the things that have the error to be more capable of surviving than the things that don't have the error. I mean, another huge hurdle in the evolution. This sounds a little too much like a biology lesson, which, you know, I didn't want to make it, but, you know, in that sense. But it was something that, you know, has been floating inside my head for a couple of days, just in how it changes your perspective in terms of how easy it becomes to see the gun trigger part of life, the idea that I am just this reactionary organism. I'm, you know, made out of this insanely complex, but the rules are really simple in terms of how it functions, in terms of the design and what it's intended to do, and intended by tendencies, not mandates, but tendencies, okay, created by these impulses, you know, hunger, thirst, I gotta poo, you know, this kind of stuff, and your life becomes organized around these impulses. And, you know, and then the more sophisticated, the higher level of the programming, where we're sort of, you know, made to see some priority, some thing, okay, that's going to be a way of making a path through the, you're faced with a bramble, okay, a jungle, and you're going to hack your way through it to get to the other side, to get to some place where there's water, and your brain is figuring out a strategy to get there. And for each individual human, there's this, what they become attached to, like, this money's going to get me there, or love is going to get me there, and sort of, you know, the broader picture. And then it gets more and more specific about, well, I'll become a ballerina, or I'll become a physicist, you know, or I'll argue on the internet, or, you know, whatever the thing is. And now that becomes your challenge in your game, and you're playing that game like you're playing chess or anything else, and the machinery kicks in. You can almost feel the machinery kick in the sense that you see how you're being compelled to win. You're being compelled to finish, to do. And that's all part of what made your ancestors survive, was that aggression, that passion, that attachment, that, you know, these aren't all the right words, it's what, you know, it's the drive, you're driven, you're competitive, you need to satisfy the image of victory. And then we all kind of know, you know, the longer you live, you know that, oh, that image of victory is such a lie. Because when you actually win, then you're stuck in this fog of, well, now what? You know, I need a new agenda. You know, and the new agenda is, well, I'll put a second story on my house. You know, and then you put a second story on and you're like, I think I need a third story. You know, you can't stop the impulse engine that's going to recreate again another jungle and another place where you see a crack, where you see a place you can fit and squeeze your way through. And, you know, that's, you know, the programming, the biology is letting you know it's still there. You know, even though we're not dogs and cats, you know, we're capable of so much more variety in our function, we still are very controlled by the impulse engine. And it's just what we make a priority. So I was sort of thinking that in terms of trolls, you know. I mean, I have lots of people who troll me. And you just wonder about their passion. You know, they have this you know, like they're seeing this as some sort of accomplishment. If they can knock Gary down, if I can knock him down, they're going to gain something. It's going to be some kind of victory. And somehow they see that as the way to get to the water, or, you know, get to the shade, or get to the whatever, the food. And it's, you know, it just makes being human seem so ridiculous that, you know, all these human beings are just caught up in all this trivial shit. And here we are, part of something that's so profoundly interesting. I mean, it's you know, my fundamental argument is it's nasty and brutal and cruel and, you know, very, you know, you want to use some negative word. I mean, evil isn't quite right because it's not with intent, but it is just such an unintelligent design, unintelligent functionality. In the rudimentary function, you know, the very idea of using error code, the very idea of creating a machine where, you know, it tortures 100,000 to create an aspirin, you know, a pill that's going to fix a headache, and it tortured 1,000 people to make an aspirin. I mean, it's all full of that kind of illogic, and. You know, where it just doesn't make any sense, the amount of wasted value to create some thing that just, you know, not even close to being worth it. You gave, you know, 7,000 people the disease to prevent giving one person the disease. I mean, just really stupid stuff. And the fact is that's what it is. But, you know, you can't, you still marvel at the story and the fact that where it comes from, which is, you know, 100 different atoms, you know, 100 different shaped atoms, nucleuses, to be more specific, and that you only need whatever, 25 of them, you know, you throw them on the surface of a planet and this rises out of it. That's a miraculous story, to use a not see definite words are just so sloppy because they have so many words have such a bad history, but it's startling, all right, to attempt trying to appropriately appreciate just what an amazing story it is that you start with 25 stupid little atoms, you know, and you end up with a colony of living organisms with all kinds of advanced features, all being obliged, being used, being tools in a ocean, you know, bubble created. That is so entirely orchestrated, so sensitive. Tiny little things happen, and, you know, somebody says a word to you, and a whole bunch of shit fires inside your brain, a whole bunch of triggers, a whole bunch of little reflexes go off, and a whole bunch of, you know, fireworks, so to speak, takes place, and you end up in jail for 40 years. You know, but whatever. I mean, it's just, one of those things where you just, I think, if you have perspective in terms of existing, it is so humbling, and it numbing in a way, in terms of just recognizing just how crazy it all is. It's just so, it's so preposterous. It's so, you know, All of this, you know, to do what? Watch a Super Bowl game. Play tiddlywinks. Yeah. Ridiculous nonsense. Yeah. Put, you know, dots on your forehead or something. Yeah. All this silly crap. All this trivial little prancing around. It's just, yeah. It's like Monty Python times 100 or something. You know, it's just a Monty Python squared. It's just something that changes you in a sense, in terms of the fact is that you can't really absorb that truth and then just keep pretending, you know, that somewhere there's something sensible in it all. There's just nothing sensible. It's just finger painting with the most expensive paint you can imagine. And such. Okay, so that's part one. Yeah, sort of. And then I'll get to the second thing. That's almost... Well, yeah, it's the context for that story in terms of, the effect certainly it has on me. All right, continuing. So the other thought is, you know, as I often think of, is, in any moment, you know, snap your fingers, and there's whatever, 500,000 tragic human events that are going to happen in that snap of your fingers. At this moment, there's a certain number of people crying on Earth right now, hysterically, because something awful, horrible has happened. And this is our reality, that's the price we pay, okay, to make videos and to talk and to prance around and to do all the silly adventuring, to hack through the brambles to get to our fishing pond, whatever we're doing. This pursuit of the living adventure, and it's just very expensive. And, you know, I mean, certain things are kind of obvious, okay? I mean, it's kind of obvious that we die. It's kind of obvious that a lot of people don't die well, okay? That looks pretty horrible. Terrifying, frankly, from, you know, as you get older and you can just smell death on yourself even. You almost smell like you're starting to turn into a corpse. It just, you know, it just reeks of it. And, it's just terrifying. It's just, there's no other word for it. You watch it happen to other people, and it's just terrifying that you're going to have to sit in that chair. You know, it's a lot worse than having to go to the worst dentist on earth. You're facing something a lot worse. And, I'm looking for a chair to go crawl under. No, I don't want to play. Not for me. It's almost like I'm saying, well, I shouldn't even have to talk about this because, gee, it should have already occurred to everybody. But then I say, look, you know, when I was 20 years old, it was far enough away where it really didn't feel, you know, didn't slow you down much, okay? You might have a pause now and then, and you might have some hypochondriac, you know, thoughts that, oh, is something, you know, something wrong, something going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And every now and then you have some accident or something where, you know, you got to start worrying about whether or not it's going to get worse or some ailment or something. But you really don't, you know. It is distant. So at least it was for me. That's my experience, is that even when I talked the talk of having some appreciation for the vulnerability, I didn't have to viscerally feel it, you know, like I am now. I'm surprised that there aren't any older folks on the internet talking about it, because I just would surprise me if they're all still immune to that fear. You know, that they're watching themselves. They look in the mirror and they're seeing they're turning into one of those old dying things, and it doesn't scare the shit out of them. So it does, like, you know, look, my parents got old and they didn't seem to be bothered too much by it. But I just can't believe they wouldn't be just sitting on the bench saying, oh my God, I am now officially an old fart, you know. And, you know, it's just a terrible category to be in. But anyway, yeah. So maybe the event I'm going through, you know, this kind of puberty in reverse, is maybe it's not something other people experience. But regardless, the point is how do you get people to appreciate something like that? You know, it's like you could do the driver's ed thing and you can show people, look what happens when you drink and drive, you end up in a tree. Look, their heads are off. It's not a good condition to be in. You know, and blah, 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 blah. Just like showing me as a kid, the cigarette smokers, you know, dying of emphysema. And it's like, well, who cares? I'm not going to live to be an old fart. You know, now that M1, okay. Shit. Yeah, just, oh boy, that was really dumb. Don't smoke. Just adding up to your dice risk. I mean, it's just putting another skull and crossbone on one of those faces of the dice and just making it more likely that you're going to roll those, the bad news boxcars. So, you know, but yeah, could I say to somebody, oh, you should really appreciate, I can say it, but how do you really get it into somebody's head and make it swirl around in there? But some of these arguments, you should be able to do that. They shouldn't need you to be old and afraid to get it, okay? You shouldn't have to be old and tired. You know, you've been through 3 divorces, you lost your house, you know, you lost your job, a lot of shit happened, a lot of crap happened, you got some sort of condition, you're disabled, you're this, you're that. You shouldn't have to go through all that crap to figure out, ooh, this is really expensive. And it's just that argument. The argument from it's really fucking expensive. And expensive in a real imposing way. You are, in fact, Small Parks Mary. Whatever that. Why can't I remember her name? Anyway, it is funny how the brains work, right? I use a reference to this stupid Mary woman who was a cook who wouldn't acknowledge that she was killing everybody she cooked for. So she would go from family to family and kill them all because she was immune to whatever the fucking disease is that I can't remember, which is just so funny. What the hell? It's just funny, right? This is this whole machine. It functions fairly well, you know, and then these little quirks where, you know, for 20 years, I can't force my brain to remember the fucking disease. So anyway, side note. But anyway, but this was a real person. I mean, you're just saying, how could somebody be this obnoxious? You know, where they actually had to tell her, well, what do you want us to do? Put you in prison? You can't be a cook anymore, okay? You are a carrier of a deadly disease. You carry it. You give it to people. Now, it's not your fault, but you can't cook for people. All right. Yeah, and she couldn't get it. So it's this, you know, you're saying, you know, so many people can't get the simple things. And you're just like, oh, you know, this should be something you learn when you're a kid, you know, just. But no parent wants to take responsibility for the jeopardy they've put a kid in, and they certainly don't want to talk about that jeopardy and you know, what you've really done in creating life, which is you've basically giving some other kid cancer. You're forcing the price to be paid. So your good outcome means there's going to be the bad outcome, right? I mean, if I roll the boxcars, then somebody else was saved from it in a way, just by the laws of probability. If it happens to me, it probably can't happen to somebody else, because, you know, everybody can't roll snake eyes and everybody can't roll boxcars. So if, you know, you're the unlucky one, then somebody else got to be lucky. And of course, vice versa. And so that's the simple concept. It's just recognizing that none of this is free. And that if you actually had to be the arbiter of the doom, that is, if you had to kill your own food, right? So, I mean, you know, this was always a, you know, it always was a pretty good argument against meat eating, you know, even when I was a meat eater, you know, it was, you know, a good argument that, well, if you think it's okay, then, you know, you should do it. Go ahead. You know, stick a knife in a cow's eye or something. You know, go ahead, cut its head off. You know, be the assassin. And, you know, and so it always seemed very ineffective in the cases where people would use this argument about being, you know, the executioner of some horrible criminal. Because to me, that would be really easy to do. Just because, not only for the fact of the victim they created, but the fact that they cost our society this insane amount of money and resources to convict them. I mean, you know, all the ones that don't confess to their crime should be tortured. Just because of how much they're going to cost us and having to have a mock trial, you know, to prove some asshole who's obviously guilty. It's just so obnoxious for the creepoids of the world to pretend they're ignorant, they're innocent when they know they're guilty. That's almost a worse crime. The perjury is almost a worse crime than the crime because of the wasted resources. And so then you get into all these kind of trade-off things. So the fire truck goes fast down the road, and every now and then it's going to hit a busload of, you know, 10-year-olds and paralyze half of them. So you're gonna pay this huge price for saving somebody else, trying to anyway. And so all those decisions have to be made. There's lots of people that seem comfortable doing that. And I, of course, would never want that job. And the only way you could ever force me to take the job is to say something like, well, nobody else can do it. If you don't drive the bus, Jack the moron will. You know, so you'd have to show me that you're going to make some complete idiot drive the fire truck if I don't drive the fire truck. You know, some sort of extortion like that. So the only way I could inject the kid with cancer is if, well, the fact is that, you're going to give cancer to 10 other kids if I don't. You know, so, you know, the only way it could make sense to me to kill a pig or something is you'd have to make the argument that, well, if you don't kill it, we're going to torture 10 other pigs. So unless I'm rescuing something for real, I can't make any sense out of it. So you have to be saving someone from harm to ever justify causing harm. And it has to be a really good, reliable fact that you're actually saving, that you aren't spending more than it's worth. So, the Golden Gate Bridge popped into my head for no good reason, just because it's always sort of inevitable that every time you build a bridge, somebody falls off of it while you're building it, so you kill somebody. So some kid becomes an orphan somewhere, some kind of, you know, there's some tragedy tied to the construction of this thing that will make society more efficient, and, you know, and this cost-benefit analysis is what's lacking. So I guess that's the real subject, is that this whole project of life on Earth couldn't pass a environmental impact statement. You couldn't prove that it's actually going to improve anything, that it fixes anything, that it does anything, and it's clearly going to kill. And it's going to kill in a horrible way. So you're paying a huge price, and you have so little to show for what was rescued, Who did you save with this death machine you ran down the road at 100 miles an hour? There's no way to rescue. There's no damsel in distress, and we're going to go save her and untie her and take her off the railroad tracks. None of that's going to happen, and we're paying this gigantic price. So, even though I did it just a couple weeks ago, the Olympics, the Super Bowl, all of this crap that people have turned into some sort of necessary, contrivance. It's not even a thing. It's not even close to anything that fixes anything or does anything useful. And yet we'll paralyze kids for it. And so my argument to you is that if you actually had to be the one, okay, that had to take the I'm going to paralyze you ticket and shove it in a kid's pocket, you know, you had to kill your food. Come on, you know you couldn't do it. I'm sure that you would say, no, for a Super Bowl, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to paralyze a kid to watch a Super Bowl game. It's ridiculous. It's insanely stupid. Nobody rational would paralyze a kid to watch a Super Bowl game. To watch some Olympic person in their little do their little blah, 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 blah. I'm the greatest spinner around in a circular. I jumped the highest off the ground. Give me a gold medal. To watch that nonsense, you would paralyze kids. And that's what actually happens, right? We actually paralyze a bunch of kids trying to jump off the ground, right? Trying to be the best at jumping off the ground. Oh, he broke his legs. You know, he's going to walk funny for the rest of his life. He's not going to get his trophy wife. He's going to become a drunk and a drug addict. That's worth it. So, and we're talking about real cost here when it comes to the game in general. We're talking about, like I said, every time I snap my fingers. Hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of people are right now, all right, having a really bad time. And frankly, it's your fault. If you're pro-life, it's your fault. You cause that pain. You cause the suffering. You cause the grief. It's all on you. You didn't rescue anybody. You didn't save anybody. All you did was torture kids. And that's what evolution does. It tortures the prodigy. The next generation is thrown into the world full of defects, and it's a defect competition. Who has the best defect? You know, and it's just about winning again. Kill most of them horribly, and whatever survives the blood pool, whatever can, you know, not drown in the blood pool, you call it a winner, okay? And you know, throw its spawn into the same arena to do it all over again, and then to do it all over again, and then to do it all over again, and then to do it all over again. And even more imbecilic is that the winners lose. Okay, they don't get to stay winners. They get cancer and die. I mean, the kid getting cancer is just a good metaphor because, you know, the kid never had a life. You know, and he's always, all he gets is the negative. He doesn't get any of this fun adventuring and winning thing. But even if you do win, it's coming for you. You always get eaten by the bear. And so, you know, the game is evade, evade, evade. Don't get eaten by the bear. But you're going to get eaten by the bear, so you're going to lose the game anyway. When all the money is on the table, the last hand of poker, you're going to lose. So if you know that going in, if you knew going to Las Vegas that the last bet you make, you're going to lose it all, would you go? You'd still go to Las Vegas. You're going to lose the house. You're going to lose everything. You're going to lose everything you've created, everything you've thought of, everything you've done, everything that is you is all just going to be destroyed. okay, in that last hour you spend in Vegas? You'd send somebody there? Oh, come on. I don't think you're that deplorable. I don't think that you're that big an asshole. Okay, if that was the real rules, if this is how we really had to play, I think you would concede you can't play that. You can't do it. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't give a kid cancer to watch the Super Bowl. You wouldn't do it. And the fact is, if you really had to cause all the, you know, if you had to be the impositioner, if you had to be the Grim Reaper, if you had to be the killer virus, you know, if you had to be there and be directly causing, directly cutting into the flesh, directly growing the cancer, you wouldn't do it, and you know it. You know you wouldn't do it. So why are you pretending that you can hide that in semantics and garbage rhetoric and baby talk about life having a purpose and life being a net positive in some way, that somehow we're running a profit, you know, when you know bullshit. Just bullshit. Because you wouldn't, if you had to play by the real game rules, you wouldn't play. If you had to accept, again, that you were going to lose everything if you went to Las Vegas, you wouldn't go. And you certainly wouldn't send your kids there. You liars. Anyway. All right, so take a pause, see if there's much else to add. All right, so Hannibal Lecter came to mind. Okay, so just now. And so I was thinking, why? Why did Hannibal Lecter pop into my head? And I was thinking, well, it's because he was so controlled and so perfectly organized. You know, he did everything, you know, with perfect style and perfect precision and almost perfect outcomes. Now, except getting his hand cut off. You know, little details where he failed. But I mean, you know, and it's, you know, that's what sort of what I aspire to do in some respects is, you know, that's my wish, is that I could be somebody who gets through the brambles very efficiently. You know, this is my job, to make videos and make persuasive arguments, and I'm really not very good at it. I mean, I'm not built for it. I'm not the kind of person built to write a book or to organize things in nice flow charts or something. It's not my best skill. But yeah, you know, I'm sitting in the driver's seat for whatever stupid reason. That's how it worked out. You know, it's like I have these skills, you know, like I, you know, so the other thing I thought of was the movie, Apocalypse Now. And I thought of that the other night in a dream, of the scene where the guy, you know, there's some, whatever, Comanche sitting in a tree somewhere, you know, talking some shit and being a sniper or something. And they're in the foxhole, and he, you know, takes the, you know, this guy has the special talent, you know. So they wake him up and, you know, to aim the mortar and shoot it and blow up the guy in the tree. You know, and he has like this magic power. And, you know, it's like, yeah, we all have our niche, you know, the thing that we just happen to be good at without having to try very hard. So I can see that I have some utility, but it's really, it's hard to say exactly what kind of mechanic I am. You know, it's more like I'm good at a lot of little things rather than expert at any one thing, something like that. But anyway, so that's, you know, so I can figure out why my brain came up with that, is that, yes, my project is, you know, I would like these videos to be more effective, but I really suck. You know, I'm not Hannibal Lecter. You know, some other actor couldn't pull off that role, you could almost argue. You know, it's just, you know, the nuance of it. You know, the just, you know, and it's like you can't walk in those footsteps. And so I'd like to be able to walk, you know, like the Rifleman or something, you know, some other archaic thing that came to mind. Yeah, it was just they had a Chuck Connors picture in one of the related videos for no good reason. And, you know, he's like 110 and in the picture. It was just so scary. You know, that we just all live too long. It's all so sad and tragic. You know, what happens to us. You know, we all get whittled down. Like the Monty Python sketch, you know, the parts just get hacked off. And you know, we're still there, though. We're still here trying. So yeah, I would have liked this to be a 5-minute perfect video, but I can't seem to manage the 5-minute perfect video, so I'll have to settle for this instead. For now, like I said, I'm working on it. You know, I just haven't gotten there yet. Even the form of the videos, I want to fix these. You know, I want to find better camera angles and do something better. You know, and the image stuff, I want to organize some of that because, you know, these people make these great images. Life Sucks. And the other guy is Dark. Yeah, something dark. I'll pause. Yeah, Dark Endless Pit. So if you go to his channel, you know, he's done some of the art in the background. I mean, I really like to be able to, you know, properly assign this stuff and attribute and whatnot. And that's just never happened. But, yeah, it's all part of this organizing thing that I'm just really not great at. I don't even know if I'm all that bad at it. It's just that I'm trying to do, you know, way too many things, and just living is really hard. In a lot of ways, I'm a basket case. I guess in a lot of ways, because Hannibal Lecter was a basket case, but he had it all so well under control, and I guess that's the part I'm envious of. Is, you know, is that I just can't be as methodical and above it. And I'm in it. And I'm every day struggling to keep myself sane enough, you know, to mimic, you know, being functional when I really should be in a padded room in some respects. I mean, I need isolation and separation, and so I'm the fish out of water, or the lizard in water, or however you want to look at it. Yeah. And so yeah, so I'm not going to be as good at anything because I'm having to write it on wet paper. But again, I could just argue that it's just because I see too many paths. I see too many ways to get to a place, and I just, you know, I keep changing my mind about which one I'm going to walk, I guess. I don't know. That's probably not a very good metaphor. Well, I just forget it. It doesn't really matter, right? What does it have to do with you? Nothing. That's right. It's not your problem. It's my problem. I will endeavor to be more functional. But, you know, the truth is I have been endeavoring. Yeah, it's not working, right? Damn. All right. So I'll double endeavor. Yeah, that's it. I'll double endeavor. It probably won't work either. But anyway, enough of a video. Thanks for Yeah, thanks for getting to this point in the video, right? You probably jumped to the end, right? Well, just go to the big finish. He always has a big finish. Oh, wait a minute. No, he doesn't. They're always kind of lame endings. All right, so anyway. So let's get to the lame ending. Okay. So this has been a donotgod.com video presentation. And, I wish, I would hope it would be more effective than it is, but there's nothing I can, I can only do my part. I can't do the thinking good part for you. Okay, so I can only do my best to think correctly. I can't make you do it. So anyway, I'll leave you with that. Until the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. That's enough. That'll do, pig. Yeah, see, I've ended a few videos with that. Have to steal my lines from lame movies. It's just so bad. But at least I'm not playing clips from The Simpsons or something, So I'm not that lame. Anyway, till the next time and such.